This is Derivative.
If you want to skip the rest of this, you do that with my blessing.
I tend to say the same thing.
It's not the same.
Maniacal fans, and they write jingles.
I don't see the point in writing your own show when you can pinch somebody else.
I hope it's smart and funny.
It's the dumbest show.
So, I mean, what's the interest of
naked old men eating dinner?
It is bad, and it is done with total confidence.
Not original, uninspired.
I'm derivative as hell.
This is Derivative. I'm Jerry. Welcome to the show. Got a lot of content today. I'm really excited. It's hard for me to record this sometimes. I've been trying since Monday. Every night this week, something has come up. It's now Thursday, and it's almost midnight. I'm getting down to recording this, but I'm glad to be here. One of the things about the jingles that still inspires me to this day is that feeling of writing something or recording something and listening back to it going, oh, wow, that was good. That was worth my time. And I feel like the stuff I put together today and over the last, 72 hours is still holding up to that standard. So at some point, maybe it won't, and I probably should quit and just let me know. Send me an email and let me know, hey, hang it up. We're sick of this. But for now, I think you're going to like this. I think we have a lot of good new content. And I wanted to start out with one right off the bat. So Tony is back on the radio. After 3 years of doing the podcast thing, they have decided to, I guess, like sublease the content or something. They're still going to do the podcast, but they're going to also put it on WMAL, local radio here in Washington, D.C., that really bassy, deep AM radio and low on the dial. And this is a song to commemorate that. It's the first song that popped into my head when I thought about the idea of doing this, and it worked well. And then coincidentally, this same artist will be parodied again later. So I guess I was derivative of my own idea of parodying this artist. But I think you'll like this. This is called Radio.
He's rising from the ashes, and he's moving one block west. He's returning for the masses to do the thing that he does best. He's famous for his writing and the PTI show. But of all the jobs he's ever had, his favorite's radio. It's the breakfast spread, it's the lox and bread, it's the bathroom in the hall. It's fighting the evil sales weasels and ignoring listener calls. It's the tight space, it's the AM base, it's the sterile studio. It's the safe confines of clear guidelines and they call the thing radio.
Hey, you're still here. You made it through the first jingle. I guess this podcast thing is working out. 6 years ago when I started tkjingles.com, I was the only one churning this stuff out, and it seems like we're going back to that place. I hope that doesn't happen. I still love this, as I said, and we'll probably keep doing it for a while, but there are other great voices that have been part of the community for so long. One of the first to join me in this crusade of stupidity was KJ, and she put out a great new one this week. I wanted to play it here. This is about the grill story where they were debating different ways to put out the fire on the grill. And this is wonderful. So here's KJ, no introduction needed. Hope you enjoy this.
It's Labor Day, let's put the hamburgers on. Time for me to grill some meat. My dad's so proud to call me Charcoal Son. He forgot I crushed the Ivy League. But something's wrong, that's a lot of smoke. And now the grease trap's fully inflamed. Have no fear, I'm not about to choke. Listen to me when I say, there'll be no fire today. Fireman Mike's on his way. I just pull, aim, squeeze, and sweep. I'm dousing the flames. Then I have practice on grass, and I am up to the task. On my right knee, safely, I am dousing the flames.
Dousing flames.
You can practice every day. Get on your right knee, my way. You too can douse the flames. Just shoulder the hose in place. Pull the pin, squeeze, sweep, and aim. You two can douse the flames.
Douse the flames.
And let me say, I am extraordinarily proud of my son. And it took a certain amount of bravery. Never in my life have I been in that circumstance. And my son was great. Great.
Speaking of that great son, I emailed Michael about 2 or 3 months ago and said, hey, I'm really sorry to hear about the restaurant closing. One of the things that I actually am good at for the last 5 years is packing and mailing shirts. If you need somebody to help you pack those chatter shirts and get them out there just to help you clear that inventory, I would be glad to help you do that. No charge or anything like that. And never heard anything back. Then I heard just a few days ago, Tony on the show saying, you know what? We have all these excess shirts. We should find a way to send these out and sell them. So the offer still stands. I'm glad to help. But this, as I was thinking about that idea and how to help send them, it occurred to me that there was another man a few years ago who had a very similar problem where he had boxes of shirts that he had to get rid of because they were just taking up space. But that person had a very tight time schedule, actually a legally mandated timetable. So I was going to write a parody about Michael not wanting to put the effort into packing the shirts, because honestly, I mean, there's 50 shirts, 100 shirts, you're getting paid for a job. It seems like probably it's not that hard a thing to do. So I was going to do some kind of sarcastic take on that. But as I thought more about my own history and my own experience with shirts in particular, this song popped into my head, and here's the continuation of that Garth Brooks theme.
You got some shirts stacked in boxes on the floor. Where have I heard this before? And you want to sell them all. But that takes work. Seems like a real pain in the ass. And though most shirts would sell real fast, you'll be stuck with those size smalls. So just do what I did when I was required. Get gas and ignite it and throw them into the fire. Throw them into the fire. Throw them into the fire. It's too much to handle and not worth the hassle. So throw them into the fire.
Derivative, remixing other people's ideas for profit and fame.
So the Derivative logo is sort of unveiled right now. It's still kind of in the works. I'm doing a few last revisions here before I put the official thing up there. You can see a small version of it on that podcast logo on that wooden sign. But the idea of that logo is I wanted to do something that was reminiscent of the Oasis logo, the most derivative band ever, one of my favorite bands, but the most clearly derivative and, you know, uninspired group of all time. So I wanted to do something that was evocative of that. So you'll notice it has a very similar font, but I wanted some other unique thing that made it my own. And I went through, God, I don't know, a dozen different revisions and different ideas, and nothing seemed to stick. And I actually, this is ironic because this is derivative of John Lennon's story, but I had a dream. I woke up from a dream and said, oh my God, I need to incorporate a flaming pie. And so if you don't know that story, John Lennon made up a story about the name of the Beatles. He said the name came to him in a dream that a man in a flaming pie said, you're Beatles with an A, and that's how they came up with the name. And that's not true at all. But that's what he said one time in an interview, sort of as a joke, and then it caught on, and that became the legend and the lore of the Beatles, that John had this dream, and that's where the name came from. And what could be better, what could be more derivative than to ripping off that story? But it actually happened that I had this idea, and I woke up and said, oh my God, I'm the man in the flaming pie. And the pi, you know, is a mathematical symbol, and derivative is a mathematical term. So these two things go together really nicely. And I realized that the TI of derivative make a pi. You can make a pi symbol out of that. So the final logo for derivative, and this builds on that previous song of the throwing the shirts in the fire, is a flaming pi. I'm the man in the flaming pi without an E. On this derivative podcast. So I hope you enjoy that. The cool thing about that too, I think, we'll see how it turns out, is that not only will the derivative text make a nice little logo for this podcast, but that flaming pie symbol in itself will be a cool little thing to put on a sticker instead of having the whole word out there. So those of you cherishing and clutching your Grelli stickers can soon accompany them with a flaming pie. Now let's move on to something else. There's another topic that I've been trying to work on, and I don't know how much success I've had with this. I started trying to put together songs, like my previous episodes of this show and the Grelli and stuff, where I'm riffing on an idea with different angles. And this is a story that I've failed, I think, a couple of different times. So I'm going to play you snippets and bits of these songs here. These are songs about Tony and the idea that if you have a scratch or a dent or some major damage to your car, you can fix it by rubbing water on it. Adam Ferrara found that to be hilarious. You know, it is what it is. It was an interesting story or whatever, but they really gave him a hard time about that. I tried to come up with my own take on that to put it into words in a song that would be funny. So here is one sort of full-length jingle on it, which is a callback to a song I did a couple of years ago that was on the Dr. Demento show. And then another one I'm just going to play a snippet of because it was just such a bomb. I've tried to outsource this to Joe because I think he'd be better vocally on it. And I just don't know the song very well. So as I was writing it and recording it, it's a Elton John song, Bad Man Across the Water. It just doesn't speak to me in a way that I can really convert into a jingle. I need to know the music in order to find, you know, my inspiration to do it. So that's kind of a false start, but I'll play a little bit of it. So here's Fix It With Distilled Water and my parody of Mad Men Across the Water, condensed. And hopefully you'll hear a better version by Joe or someone else here in the near future.
I just crashed my car. It's pretty bad. I need the jaws of life to get me out of here. Then I'll go home, oh, to get a rag and a bucket of Perrier, 'cause I can't fix my car with distilled water. Car with distilled water. Let me teach you. You don't need rubbing compounds or new parts. Ignore Adam's comments, Gary's laughter. 'Cause all you need to fix your car.
I am a huge Stephen King fan, and I started reading him when I was maybe 11 or 12, probably a little bit too young to be reading Stephen King, given some of the twisted stuff you find in those books. But I've loved his work ever since. I've read almost everything. And so it's been a delight to see these new It movies coming out because they are so true, in my opinion, to the spirit of the novel. And I just wanted to share a few thoughts on the novel. So there's some spoilers here on the book and the movie and stuff. This will be pretty quick, and then we'll get back to some songs. But this, I just saw it this past weekend. I actually saw it twice because I liked it so much, part two of this It franchise. So when I read the book, maybe 25 years ago or something, a little bit longer, there were a couple of things that stuck with me all this time. So I think I've only really read this particular book one time. Many of his other books, Misery, I've probably read four or five times, and The Dark Tower I've read through a couple of times. But It, I couldn't stomach reading it again. But I remember vividly five things. The first thing is that opening scene, and I was so glad to see it in that first movie with Georgie in the paper boat. That, as an 11-year-old or 12-year-old reading that book, that scared the hell out of me. and just made me a fan for life. It was just so vivid of this boy, you know, being killed by the clown and the guilt that his brother felt over it. And just, oh my God, that it was just, it just wrecked me. It was just amazing. So that right there just pulled me in and hooked me right away. The next thing I remember about reading that novel was, and this is really silly, and this just kind of shows maybe how old I am, and I'm sure some of you can relate to this, was there was a part early in the book when one of the characters commits suicide, and the word "it," you know, he drew it on the wall of the bathroom in blood, and they showed it, they showed that scrawl of blood, it was in black, it was just an ink, on the page, and I thought that was so cool, because in a novel, it's just a bunch of typewriting, right? There's no pictures. So it was like almost a comic book. They have a picture there of the bloody "it" scrawl on the wall. Really silly, but that I remember that. It's the only book that I've read like that where, hey, there's an animation sort of drawn on the page here. Next, number 3 of 5 here, was my disappointment that when the kids confronted it, it was a giant spider. It was just the lamest thing ever. Just they're fighting this big spider. So just like, what is this? It was like a cheese ball. It was like Critters or something, some cheese ball sci-fi horror movie or something. It just seems so dumb given the buildup of all the awesome stuff that had happened before that and the dread and the terror and the suspense. It just didn't pay off. And that was the first time I thought, oh, the ending of this kind of stinks. And I loved that in the second It movie, they had 3 or 4 knocks on Stephen King about how he writes shit endings. And even they had Stephen King with a cameo making a comment about how he writes terrible endings. That was awesome. It was like in Deadpool 2, there's a joke. I think it was Deadpool 2, maybe Deadpool 1, but I think it was Deadpool 2. There's a joke about how Rob Liefeld can't draw feet, which is like a notorious thing if you were a comic book fan in the 1990s, that Rob Liefeld was this like wunderkind 15-year-old, you know, comic artist who created all these great things, but he couldn't draw feet. And so they make some stupid comment about that in the Deadpool movie. And as, you know, it's such an inside joke, but just like Stephen King, it really gave me a laugh. All right. So number 4 of the things that stuck with me 25 years later from reading that book, I guess the cycle of it is like 27 years. So maybe it's the same time period for me, probably about the same thing. Maybe I should read it again. But number 4 that stuck with me was there was an entire chapter about one of the bullies and his obsession with torturing animals. And it just vividly described him like taking cats and suffocating them in refrigerators. And it was horrifying. And it was just so twisted. And it was the first time I thought to myself, like it was breaking the fourth wall kind of thing. As I was reading it as a 12-year-old or whatever, I thought, this kind of seems like something the author is fantasizing about doing because this has nothing to do with the story. Like this is just so screwed up. Like what is this doing here? I guess we're showing some depth of this side character's psyche, but kind of irrelevant and unnecessary to the overall plot. This character is not going to have a major impact anywhere in the storyline. Okay. And then the last thing, and I think that this has been mentioned online a lot now for people who haven't read the book or are shocked to discover it, when the kids confront the monster in the book, they're like 11 years old or something, or 12 years old. They're just young kids. They have a gangbang. It's just the weirdest thing. It was so gross. It made no sense. I'm sure that there's some like narrative purpose that Stephen King thought that like, oh, it's the end of their innocence, the end of their youth, or it's a virgin sacrifice to defeat the demon or something. But whatever the hell that was, it was just an excuse to have this like child porn scene, basically. It was just so screwed up. And I thought that that was the ritual of Chud or whatever that they mentioned in the movie. I thought that was the gangbang. That's what I remember is that name, like Chud, that was just so visceral or whatever. Like that name stuck with me. So when I watched the second movie and Mike, the character, says, "Oh, we got to get together and do the ritual of Chud," I said, "Oh God, it's going to do the gangbang here." And luckily, that part was left out of the movie. So last thought on this. So Stephen King, awesome. I discovered, I don't know what convinced me to read it. I think I was taking a long car drive and I did the audiobook. But Stephen King's son, Joe Hill, is a little bit derivative of Stephen King, but is so good. And just like Oasis, derivative of the Beatles. Like, I can appreciate the, like, yeah, this is kind of echoing something else, but it's also really good. I also can really enjoy it. So if you haven't read Nosferatu, the TV show, meh. But the book itself is just wonderful. And there's little call-outs to Pennywise and It in there and other little Stephen King nods, which don't even need to be in there. I mean, the book stands well on its own, but he has a sense of humor and calls out these things. And coincidentally, Joe Hill is also a huge Oasis fan. So one of my favorite things about his newsletter is he reviews like the Liam Gallagher album and stuff. So we're probably the same age, just this little incestuous circle here of all this stupid derivative self-referential stuff.
Enjoying the show? You have terrible taste.
All right, let's get back to some songs. I wanted to play some jingles that, in my opinion, would not be possible without Weird Al Yankovic. So the first one is a brand new one I wrote just in the last 24 hours about that amazing Washington Post dog park story. So if you have not heard this, on Tony's show, they've mentioned this story. There's been a couple of different articles about it. A bunch of rich folks in Chevy Chase, Maryland, petitioned or campaigned with the local board to dismantle a dog park that only was put in like a year ago by a unanimous vote. They said there's too much dog barking, too much noise. They're trying to be on their patios enjoying wine and they hear all these dogs barking. So by a 5-2 measure, they agreed to tear down the fence and tear down that wall of the dog park. So it's a very sad story. I researched this actually quite heavily. Many jingles, like those Garth Brooks jingles earlier, take 30 to 60 minutes to write, 15 minutes to record or something. It's pretty straightforward. But I don't spend that much time crafting it because the idea is sort of self-evident, comes together right away and fits a good structure. This one, I wanted to get it right because there were so many articles written and there were so many great word choices that this writer had put together. And so I wanted to pay homage to that. So many of the lyrics of this dog park song are a callback to the Washington Post article. So it probably plays better if you actually read it at littlesongs.net because you can see like ferocious, you can see it spelled as fur. But anyway, just this is that song, Dog Park. And it's only, I only know this, the origin song because Weird Al's Jurassic Park, which is a parody of MacArthur Park. I never would have known MacArthur Park. It's a pretty terrible song in my opinion, but he parodied that. So I know that. So then here's this. And then a favorite of the last few months, Living with Sciatica, which is, again, in thanks to Living with a Hernia, which is a parody of Living in America, or Coming to America, Living in America. Another, you know, song that I am aware of, but probably wouldn't have thought the parody without having that other one stuck in my head. And then lastly, a collaboration between Elliot and Joe, which is a parody of Michael Jackson's Beat It, but Weird Al did Eat It, and then this parody is also called Eat It. So maybe this could have been written without that, but it kind of feels like it's derivative of Weird Al's derivative works. So here are Dog Park, Living with Sciatica, and Eat It.
It wasn't long ago they took a muddy piece of land and they built a place for dogs to run and play. At first support was unanimous, now there's growing animal animus. Dog parks are great, just not in Chevy Chase. They say the dog park's noisy 'cause they bark. All the rich people are going wild. Someone take this fence down right away. The debate was quite ferocious, but the board just passed a motion. I guess the puppies won't be sniffing butts again. Ow!
Woo!
aching, my feet are numb. It hurts me just to crawl out of bed. I stumble to the window, watch my neighbors come and go. Even if I don't fall over, I know I'm one step closer
to your final destination.
It's coming soon. Every moment is a risk. I could slip another disc.
Oh! Living with sciatica.
I got the shots, but I'm barely coping.
Living with sciatica.
I think I'll take one ibuprofen. Pills would be far too potent.
Oh, come on, man. What are you doing out here, man?
He's at the Nats game drinking wine and not beer. Some little seem to wish he would just disappear. They fill the mailbag and their words are really clear. Chris, eat it. Lace, eat it. Makes weird references right across CNN. Like Tufts Hulk Hogan laid up in the Macho Man. He bugs Ian Khan cause he's a Dawson's Creek fan. Lace, eat it. The Hoyer schedule is bad. Lace, eat it.
Eat it.
Eat it.
Eat it.
Behind the plate is where he's seated. Talking heads bash him all day and night. Likes to drink prom from a bottle that's white. Chris, eat it.
That song was from 2018. One of the benefits, I guess, of doing this show in real time is that as I was queuing that track up, I realized that John Quinn wrote an idea around that that I recorded back in 2014. I don't even remember doing this. I've been doing this so long. This was news to me. So here is an idea from John Quinn to that same Weird Al parody of Eat It. But instead of Saliza, this is the legacy Eat It, back when it was always Eat It McManus.
McManus, don't you know who's king around here? When Nigel plays a song, I hear it crystal clear. I name the band and song, and you know I'm never wrong.
So eat it, McManus, eat it.
If it's only playing for a sec, I don't care. If I can recall the words, you know I'll know the year. I calmly call it out, and I hear the little shout.
Just eat it.
I'm not here to be fair, so eat it, eat it. There's no shame in being defeated. I don't need the Google, my knowledge is tight. If it's pre-1960, you know that I'm right. So eat it,
just eat it.
Eat it,
McManus, eat it.
So that little theme got me thinking, I'm going to take a left turn here, about how many songs I've done and how little inventory I have of the ones that I didn't write or I didn't attribute to myself when I wrote them or put them in a different bucket. So some of the collaborations early on where there were group songs or I worked with two or three people, I just don't have them in my own little like Jerry's Jingles folder. And they don't count towards my total on the website, and they're just kind of out there on their own. So I forget about them because I don't listen to them and I don't practice them for the jingle shows. One of those that comes to mind was Neil Young's Old Man that I worked on with Slim Stanton and my brother Jeff, and they did all the instruments on this. This is awesome. Most of the songs you've heard today are karaoke tracks. I try to put out so much new material that I no longer spend very much time recording my guitar or soliciting new musical backing tracks from my friends or family, because I just wouldn't be able to put out any material if I did that. I'd put out just like three jingles a month, and I want to do more because I wanted to be able to do this podcast periodically. But this was back in a time, back 2014, when I wasn't doing too much podcasting, and I really just wanted to get the material out and make it good. So I think there was probably no backing track for Old Man at the time, so we put this together, and it's awesome. And then Dylan, who is one of the funniest writers at littlesongs.net, Dylan has 20 songs out there. Every one of them is pretty much solid gold. Also did an Old Man parody about a year ago. And it's great hearing these two takes on the same song because my version is all about how I am not like Tony. I'm young and he's old, and I don't do all these horrible things that he does, an old man. And then Dylan's is the opposite. He's 32, but he's doing all the same things, even though he's very young. So I hope you'll enjoy this. This is two different takes on that same theme of Neil Young's Old Man.
Bald man, look at my life. I am not like you are. Old man, look at my life. Not a millionaire, but I still have hair. I'm kind with no axe to grind, and I never toast my steak. I still pay parking bills, don't write my letters with a quill. I get all my news online, and I summer with Raju. Orange bear, take a look at my life. I am not like you. I don't need bifocals, but I need shampoo. Still young, so I won't drop dead if I catch the flu.
Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you. Old man, look at my life. I'm 32 and just like you. I golf with men named Norby and love Johnny O coupons. I've been shopping for Acuras. I say pant like it's singular. Now I'm joining Columbia, where the next youngest member's 51.
Great was that. One of the things that used to drive me nuts and still does to some degree is when the same song is done repeatedly. And I think it's when it's done a second time without adding a lot of new value. And or if it's done in rapid succession. I think like 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, basically like 20 people did that all like within 2 weeks of each other. I'm exaggerating, I think, in my own memory, but I remember finding that totally absurd, and I know that I had many sarcastic takes on that particular song that I did in the old podcast and stuff. So, speaking of repeating yourself, I hope that you found this familiar. It's kind of the same thing, just with a new name and maybe a little bit more talking or a slightly different pacing. Hopefully the audio is good. I'll be publishing this shortly with this new app. Hope it works out and you're able to enjoy this soon. Send me your feedback, ChineseFood@tkjingles.com. And remember, if you want to support me, you can go to patreon.com/littlesongs. I would love your support just to keep this going and pay for all these karaoke tracks and all the other assorted stuff I do with the show. If you supported the Kickstarter or you're already on there, you probably have a survey. I need to know what you want. So please respond to that if you haven't, because I need to be able to figure out how many shirts to order and what exactly I'm doing. But the main thing I need to figure out is what the headcount is going to be for Nashville in 2020. June 27, 2020, Jingle Fest 6? Yes, Jingle Fest 6. I don't know how big of a venue to get. So hopefully with that survey here, I will get a good headcount and we can get that locked down. And I'll have some news for you in the next month or so on this podcast talking about that. And you can all make your travel plans. And you'll all be there, obviously, because why wouldn't you want to come? Folks from Tony's show are going to be there. We're going to have a lot of fun stuff going on that weekend, or so I'm told. So it's going to be a good time. And maybe we'll even do some like real music too, or we can do our own podcast, whatever you want to do. I don't know. Let me know. We'll figure it out. It's a long way away, so we have plenty of time to plan. And believe me, I will. I'll be thinking about that. I'll be thinking about June 27, 2020, probably every day from now until then, just to make sure it doesn't suck. That's really my main goal. I have talked about this before. I usually have like stress dreams in the month or two leading up to the Jingle Fest of showing up at the event, not having prepared any of the backing tracks or a set list or anything like that. But that's not going to happen. Never has happened. It won't happen. But it is my fear. It's the thing that keeps me honest and keeps me doing this and trying to keep it all structured and orchestrated and very tightly prepared for you. So hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back here soon with a new episode of Derivative.
Yes, it's true, got some free stuff to give you. Follow me, share a song, I'll send some to you. My wife says this is so bizarre. Who the hell would want to put one of those on their car? Won't you sticker me? We all love stuff for free. Each one cost $1.50. But folks, this one's on me.
I almost forgot to mention that the same offer still stands from the Grelli and previous incarnations of this show. If you leave me a review on iTunes or some other platform, email me ChineseFood@tkjingles.com and I will send you, I will mail you a free Derivative sticker. I'd love to send that to you. I want your reviews. I want your feedback. You don't leave me a 5-star review. Just tell me your honest opinion. Hopefully it's funny. I'll read it here. And we'll have that little symbiotic thing going there. You'll get some free swag for it and I'll get to know your thoughts. And those reviews tend to increase the presence and awareness and overall significance of a show on iTunes. So everyone you leave, whether even if it's like just a short thing, hey, I like this, or hey, this sucks, it helps me. So please do that. Go to iTunes and leave your thoughts. Thanks.
There's a singer, just turned 58, likes to sing about beer and stuff that makes America great. Doing battle with the insufferable Natalie Maines. She once wore a shirt that read F-U-T-K. Writing his hit songs for all the soldiers who fought Saddam and fought in Afghanistan. Performed at the inauguration for Donald J. Trump, but also voted for Obama. He's singing for the troops, ballin' Toby Keith. How do you like him now that he's famous and on the radio? He doesn't do those singing shows like Shelton or Levine. That's what I think. I'm not that familiar with his work.
Standing on